sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the first part of a two-part speech given by Dahlia Wasfi at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California, on May 15, 2010. Dahlia Wasfi has an Iraqi father and a Jewish mother. She's a medical doctor, but now donates much of her time to anti-war efforts. This part of her speech is about 27 minutes long, so let's get started.
It's a tremendous honor for me to be here, and I'm very humbled to have the opportunity to be with you today. The reason why I'm here is my family, and I have family in Iraq, I have family in the United States, my blood relatives, but my family is bigger than that. And I like to think of us here in this room today as a family, and hopefully you'll walk away feeling that you too have family in Iraq. And I want our family, even including the CIA operatives who are here undercover, welcome. Maybe you will learn something today. Consider this an intervention. It will be broadcast on the A&E network, not Architects and Engineers, Arts and Entertainment. And you will be extraordinarily rendered to group therapy and some deep internal examination. And then you will take the lead of the whistleblowers and move on to using your skills for good. Thank you. And I'll move on to my topic. One more thing to say, which I'm trying to get into the habit of saying it, because I will be talking about stolen land and ethnic cleansing and displacement today, to remark that I am standing here on land that was taken without permission or authority. And if we're going to heal, we got to acknowledge everything that's in our past, and then we can move forward from there. So this is a picture of me when I was 4 years old. This is our backyard in Basra, Iraq. And I will tell you the story of how I ended up there. If you can see, this is the typical yellow brick architecture that is throughout Iraq. And we would often see in pictures and news from Iraq, I don't know if it's an APC, but a military, American military vehicle smashing through these walls. But this is the standard architecture. So it doesn't mean that there's WMDs behind the walls. It means that that's the fence, basically, that they have. Now, in the 34 years since this photo was taken, there's been a lot of ups and downs in my life, but I have been fortunate to have the support of my nuclear family. But unfortunately, this little one no longer has that. This is a little girl growing up in Afghanistan whose parents we killed in December 2008. And if she is still alive today, her future is grim. But this is the image that I hope we can keep in mind as we continue our aggressions. Who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? For us, it changes a lot, like professional wrestling. But let's just examine a couple of situations with good guys and bad guys, because it really depends who's doing the spin. Back in 1980, the Summer Olympics were held in Moscow in what was then still the Soviet Union. And President Jimmy Carter announced that there would be a boycott because in December of 1979, the Soviets had invaded Afghanistan, and we actually led a 61-nation boycott. Now, fast forward 30 years, the Winter Olympics are held in Vancouver, British Columbia. United States and Canadian forces are occupying Afghanistan. And not only is there no boycott, but Bob Costas is doing a live feed from Camp Eggers in Kabul. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Let's look at another scenario of how the spin might go down. Now, this is an image, very famous image, of George Washington crossing the Delaware. At this time in the winter of 1776, the Americans had retreated across the Delaware River into Pennsylvania from New Jersey. And the British in New Jersey had entered their winter quarters, and they're like, whew, We defeated them, we're done for the winter season, and, you know, it was Christmas. They assumed victory. But in the middle of the night, George Washington came on the boats back across the Delaware River. Now, from this perspective of looking at the founding fathers, we might remember ourselves as America. We risked our lives to gain our independence. But if we looked in the British papers at that time, how would they have remembered it? America, we will kill you in your sleep on Christmas. So it depends on who's delivering the message, what angle you have on it. But if we stand back and we take a look, we follow the money, we will see that there are some facts there and some genuine sense of justice that needs to be respected. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Well, here's another topic where it gets really murky. Now, I'm going to try to give you the information today, and it's really what I deliver today is an encouragement, and it's very easy for me with this audience that's obviously very motivated and already very well informed on what our government is doing. But you go out there in the world and then come to your own conclusions with what you hear today. America, Israel, and Iraq, it might not be what you think. This is, of course, the Israeli flag. This is the Iraqi flag before the invasion. This was the proposed Iraqi flag for after the invasion. One of these things is not like the others. You can draw your own conclusion, but Iraqis rejected it hands down. So my take-home messages from today, which hopefully I will begin to establish a foundation of, is that the occupation of Iraq is an extension of the occupation of Palestine. So it's not just Iraq is here, Palestine's there, ooh, Syria's all the way over. It's all not all disconnected. We're all in the same region. We got Iran, and then there's Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's all connected. And I will introduce this theory today. Also, there are joint American-Israeli operations, which are keeping both, well, the grand occupation of Iraq and Palestine going. So we are responsible for what's happening. That the Zionist influence, among others, that is guiding U.S. foreign policy is against our interest. In no way is this in our interest, except for the handful of people who are making money off of it. And so if we want to move forward, not only bring an end to the so-called war on terror, but we're going to have to end the entire occupation and let justice be served. But enough about deep politics. Let's talk about me. So these are my parents. My dad, originally from Basra, Iraq. Actually, I do have those pictures also that Barry was mentioning to you because that's the city where my father's from in terms of the undercover operations there. My dad, born and raised there, went to Baghdad University College of Education and did well enough to earn a government scholarship to do his graduate studies overseas. So in 1963, he came to the U.S., was studying at Georgetown University, and lived at the International Student House, where he met another graduate student, a nice Jewish girl from New York. Now, with an Arab father and Jewish mother, although to be clear, though we tend to think of those as distinct, unrelated entities, there are many Arab Jews when you take Arab as an ethnicity and Jewish as the religion. But my mom is, her parents are Ashkenazi, so that's the European Jewry. So with an Arab father and Jewish mother, I am 100% Semite. And that what that means is that you can insult either side of my family, and that would be anti-Semitic. But if we can save that for the panel tomorrow, we can discuss that later. The other point is that with an Arab father and Jewish mother, I'm going to be in therapy for a long, long time. So, okay, so my parents got married in 1968, had my sister in 1969, and then their lives dramatically improved in 1971 when I was born. Now, we may have a difference of opinion on some things, but I think we can all come together as one in realizing that this is a picture of a very cute baby right here. Excellent. Let's build on this unity. Now, I show you this picture not only because I like it, but this is when I'm 6 months old in June 1972 in our backyard in Basra. After my father finished his PhD in 71, he had to pay back that government scholarship that he was on back in Iraq for the same amount of time that he was in the U.S. So for the first 5 years, 71 to 77, he had to teach there. So the first 5 years of my life, I was born in December of 71, it was back and forth between Iraq and the U.S. And when you're a kid, you think everybody does that, but apparently that's not the case. But anyway, for any of us, the memories that we have from before the time that our brains could make memories are from the pictures. So you talk to me about Iraq, I think of this. Unfortunately, if you don't have that personal connection and you live in this country, you've been trained to think of this. And that's where the problem is. It's easy to hate this. Also with a very, from a very racist dehumanization of Arab Muslim men in general. But
you know, he ultimately was executed, but he did not suffer under his policies. It was the Iraqi people. You take any country in the world, it is made up of families, any country. And it is those families who either reap the benefits of what their government does or they pay the price. And 26 million Iraqis are paying the price. And families here are paying the price. Now, this is an Iraqi family. There's my dad, my sister, and me. But anyway, this is an Iraqi family. And now this is an American family. There's my dad, my sister, and me. See, we all look alike. My dad, well, I was born in New York. My sister was born in D.C., and my dad became an American citizen in the 1980s. So when you talk to me and when the buildup was happening to shock and awe of Iraq, it might as well have been the shock and awe of Yonkers, New York. To me, it was the same thing, and I had family there I was worried about. These were my mom's parents. They're both gone now, but they were Ashkenazi Jews from Austria. They fled their homeland during Hitler's Anschluss, and they made it to New York to start a new life, and my mom was born in New York. So unfortunately, now I have genocide on both sides of my family. So it's for both sides that I do what I do today, and I hope that will come through in the information that I present. Now, just to make a clarification at the beginning, the criticism of states' policies, because here's where we get lost in a lot of emotion. It is important to note that the criticism of the policies of the Third Reich is not anti-German. That's anti-racist policies. Criticism of apartheid South Africa is not anti-Dutch. It's not anti-white. That was criticism of a racist form of government. Criticism of SB 1070 in Arizona is not anti-American or anti-white. That is against a racist policy in Arizona. And criticism of the state-sponsored terrorism that is affected by Israel is not anti-Semitic. That is accurate condemnation of illegal policies. Now, even though I have the background I do, that gives me the confidence to say what I just said. I look like I do, and people think something different of me. But it's enough to throw out that label of anti-Semitism to cover up the crimes that are happening today. So I hope that if you see me with a big mouth, then you too can have a big mouth about it. All right. My first topic, occupation of Iraq, is an extension of the occupation of Palestine. And the first thing we have to do is look very, very briefly. Everything today is just skimming the surface, but at least it's a start. We have to look at what happened in Palestine. David Ben-Gurion, who now has an airport, was listed as one of three significant leaders of early Zionism, along with Chaim Weizmann and Theodor Herzl, one of the three significant leaders of early Zionism. And Zionism is a political movement. It doesn't have to do with religion, but it's a political movement for creation of a Jewish state. So there's inherent discrimination in the Zionist movement when it's exclusively for Jews. And this is what was planned. This is a very important image here. This is what was planned to be the Jewish state. And as was described by David Ben-Gurion, to the north, the Litani River, which is southern Lebanon, to the northeast, the Wadi Auja. I don't speak Arabic, so my pronunciation is horrible. Thank you so much. And the southern border will be mobile. Who has mobile borders? But this is the point, is that the decision to establish a Jewish state, first they were going to do it in Latin America, they were looking at Uganda, they finally honed in on the Holy Land in Palestine. And although these are all states created by the empires carved out of the sand, the problem is that this is other people's territories, all of Palestine, part of Egypt, part of Jordan, part of Syria, part of Lebanon. And the year that this was proposed by the World Zionist Organization was 1918. This is long before the Holocaust of the 1940s. This is a famous saying for the Zionist movement, and it has been above, I don't know if it's still there, but it has been above the doors to the Knesset, the Israeli Congress, our land, Israel, from the Nile to the Euphrates. You got some other people living there that are going to have a problem with that. And this is basically, in a nutshell, what the problem is. That in 1946, the green is the distribution of Palestinian-owned land, and the white is the distribution of Jewish-owned land. In 1947, the UN partition plan proposed giving the majority of the land to the Jewish population, the minority of the people. Deal or no deal? That's a bad deal if you were Palestinian. So no deal. The Arabs said no. Following that, and today's the big day, on May 15th, 1948, the Zionists declared their state of Israel. And what was left after a process of ethnic cleansing and massacres, that this became the white, still Jewish territory, and this was Palestinian territory. Now, this is what's happened since then, which is what makes things so difficult today, is the same thing that happened in South Africa, the establishment of what they call Bantustans, these independent areas that are completely under Israeli control. And so when you hear the phrase being wiped off the map, this is what I hope you'll think of. Historic Palestine in 1948, today marks, in the Western world, the birth of the State of Israel. Today marks al-Nakba for the Arab world, and that is the catastrophe. Over 700,000 Palestinians were driven out. That is why, to this day, Palestinians are the largest refugee population, and now numbering 7 million. And the way they were driven out was through terror campaigns by groups like the Irgun and the Stern Gang. For example, the first agenda for the Zionists was to get the British out of Palestine. They had a mandate there. And once the British were kicked out, they moved on to removing the indigenous people. But one of the ways they pushed the British out was to bomb their headquarters at the King David Hotel in 1946. That strike was led by Menachem Begin, who would become Israel's prime minister down the road in the 70s. And it's important to note, for what our government is doing, that Rahm Emanuel, the White House chief of staff under Obama, his father was in the Irgun. Israel is our colonial outpost in order to exert influence in that part of the world, which is rich with resources that we want to control. The Middle East is actually a colonial term. The Middle East, the Far East, that's relative to colonial powers. That's relative to the West. What's more accurate is the term Western Asia. And what the Middle East is, really, is the Arab world plus the colonial imposition of the State of Israel. And I think Iran counts as part of the Middle East also, but that's a separate ethnicity. That's a different lineage that's not Arab. What we have to understand is that Israel, an apartheid state which has different rules depending on your religion or ethnicity, it survives only with our tax dollars, only with American military, economic, and political support that is in violation of international law. What we have to see, understanding that history, that the root of the ethnic cleansing began in 1948, you have to put that everything that's happened since then in that context. Israel invaded and occupied historic Palestine. The British, the French, and the Israelis attacked Egypt in 1956. They invaded and occupied the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt in 1967, eventually having to give it back. They invaded and occupied the Golan Heights of Syria in 1967. They still occupy the Golan Heights. They've invaded and occupied southern Lebanon. Again, they want to get, you remember the picture, they want to get to the Litani River. This is the desert. Water as a resource is critically important, so they want the water resources. And so they invaded and occupied southern Lebanon in 1982. That occupation lasted till 2000. They assaulted again in 2006, as Kevin referenced. It's important to note that the response to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982 was the emergence of Hezbollah. Action, reaction. We are creating what's happening there. Now, there are a number of UN resolutions condemning Israeli actions from the period 1947 through 2004. I'm not going to read you all of them, but this is what is going on behind the scenes. This is what consistently the international community has a problem with. Consistently, and the only cover that Israel has is our superpower Security Council vote that usually vetoes resolutions. One of those resolutions was condemning the actions of the Israelis on June 7, 1981, when they bombed the nuclear facility near Baghdad. It was under construction. Iraq was far from having nuclear capabilities, but it was bombed by the IDF. Now, why would Iraq be seeking nuclear technology? Why would Iran be seeking nuclear technology? Why would any state in that part of the world be seeking nuclear technology? Because Israel has between 250 and 400 nuclear warheads, and they've invaded their neighbors. They have a reason to be concerned. My mom has coined this. She's the first one I heard it from. But the American policy on Israeli nuclear weapons, don't ask, don't tell. So with the events of September 11th, 2001, which we need a new investigation for, or an initial credible investigation, why do they hate us? Well, I think people in this room know it's not because they hate our freedoms. It's because we've been killing innocent people for a long time, whether it's in the Arab world or whether it's in Southeast Asia or historically what we've done to basically colonial rape and pillage throughout those continents that are far away from us. We've given people reason. And to most of the world, we are the terrorists. Number one, most dangerous threats to global security, international poll, United States and Israel. Yeah. And that's the poll that was done, so that's not just me saying it. So again, with that brief background, I will argue that the occupation of Iraq is an extension of the occupation of Palestine to control those resources. And to look at who was excited and who drew up the plans to invade Iraq, let's look at the big factors. First of all, Operation Iraqi Freedom. The original name was Operation Iraqi Liberation, but the acronym was OIL. That was bad PR. I'm not kidding. It totally happened. And so they changed it, and now it's working out so much better for everybody. I call it a perfect storm of special interests. On the one hand, you had, and by no means is this exclusive, but these are the major players. Oil interests, of course, Bush family, long history in the oil industry. Dick Cheney, we all know, his connection to Halliburton. Condoleezza Rice used to be on the board of Chevron. And when she was on the board of Chevron, also working with Chevron's sister company, Unocal, was a young upstart named Zalmay Khalilzad, who would become, after invasion, the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, then became the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. And, like, we didn't look stupid enough. We put, like, the only ambassador, the only person we could find is someone who doesn't speak Arabic. Do you know how dumb that looked on the evening news? And of course, Hamid Karzai was also with Unocal. So there's your oil interests. And then there was this group of Zionist neoconservatives. Now, in Israel, the Israeli government was and continues to push for invading Iran. But the American neoconservatives, they were saying, we will do Iraq first, and that will be a good launching pad for going into Iran. So that they said, okay. So Zionist neoconservatives who pushed for invading Iraq, people like Richard Perle, who is chairman of the Defense Policy Board, which is an advisory group to the Pentagon, one-third of the members of that board, the 30-member board, actually nine of the 30 members, had ties to corporations who got billions of dollars worth of contracts after we invaded Iraq. Paul Wolfowitz, of course, went from cheering for invading Iraq to sharing his love at the World Bank. And Douglas Feith, both of them were undersecretaries of defense. Feith eventually had to resign because he was being investigated by the FBI and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee because top secret information from his office, the Office of Special Plans, got leaked to on Iran. Top secret information on Iran got leaked to the Israeli government through his office. And so he went where all war criminals apparently go. He became a professor at Georgetown University. Don't ask me. My dad went to Georgetown, and I worked at Georgetown for a while, and that's another. Georgetown, the country needs to be fixed and Georgetown needs to be fixed, but I digress. Also, David Wormser was a special assistant at the State Department. And the reason I have their names highlighted is because back in 1996, Perle, Feith, and Wormser wrote a proposal, a position paper for their boss. It was called A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm. And what they called for in this paper were three major objectives. Number one, cut off peace talks with Yasser Arafat. This is 1996. Number two, launch military assaults on the occupied territories of Palestine. And number three, get rid of Saddam Hussein. This is 1996. Who are they writing this paper for? Then and current Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And this is a picture of many members of the Israeli government. Netanyahu, Ehud Olmert, Ariel Sharon, Shimon Peres. You know, as a homeland for the Jews, you never see any Ethiopian Jews at the front. Kind of like here. Now, I know you guys will know this name. This connection between Israel and Iraq, Philip Zelikow, one of the Zionist neoconservatives who was on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, anyone who is on the PFIAB, go to The Hague. He gave a presentation at University of Virginia in September of 2002, almost a year after 2001 attacks and a few months before attacking Iraq. And of course, he became the, I think, executive director of the 9/11 Commission. And he said at UVA, why would Iraq attack America or use nuclear weapons against us? I'll tell you what I think the real threat is and actually has been since 1990. It's the threat against Israel. The American government doesn't want to lean too hard on it rhetorically because it is not a popular sell. And it isn't. You want to go to the American people and say, look, we got these interests, we want to control the oil and where it goes in that part of the world. And America, we'd like you to send your sons and daughters to go kill and be killed to control oil resources. No, but wait a minute. September 11th happened. Let's lie and say that Saddam Hussein did it. Let's lie and say he has nuclear technology, he can put together a nuclear weapon and strike us in 45 minutes flat. Forget that in the 1991 Gulf War that Iraq's Air Force and Navy were destroyed. So they're going to swim over here all the way across the Atlantic. They're going to make it, and they're going to strike us. And so we need to, this is for our national security, this is for our way of life, we have to send people there. And even that wasn't a great sell, but reluctantly, the country went along. So more recently, it was always speculated about the role the Israelis had in influencing our policy. But at the, I don't know if I'll say it right, the Shilko inquiry on Iraq, just in February of 2010, it was a toothless inquiry. It was really just the formality, but at least the British did the formality. We haven't even gotten to that point yet. This needs to happen at The Hague. But what Tony Blair said, he admitted that Israeli officials were influenced and that they participated in the decisions by the United States and the UK to attack Iraq, that they were present at the meetings he was having with Bush in Texas in 2002. And as Blair said, so that was a major part of all this. This is something we need to know about. Who's directing our foreign policy? So it is joint American-Israeli operations that are occurring in Palestine and in Iraq, either directly or through funding. An article from December of 2003 in the British paper The Guardian, Israel trains U.S. assassination squads in Iraq. They have been conducting ethnic cleansing campaigns for 60 years now. So when we need help in eliminating opposition and resistance, we go to the Israelis for advice. The IDF has been sent to Fort Bragg, which is the home of American Special Forces, and Israeli military consultants have visited Iraq, which is extremely dicey, because even just for appearance purposes, but it's happened. And what they've done, if you watch what the U.S. troops are doing, it's the same thing that the Israeli troops are doing in occupied Palestine. Sealing off centers of resistance with razor wire, raising buildings from where attacks have been launched against U.S. troops. Another word for this? Collective punishment. Another group that did this? The Nazis.
You've just been listening to the first part of the speech given by Dalia Wasfi at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California, on May 15th, 2010. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of her speech. And again, her website is liberatethis.com. Also, a website has been created in reaction to the FBI's raiding of 8 peace activists' homes in Chicago and Minneapolis on September 24th. And that website is stopfbi.net. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.